Hello, Francisca. Hi, Femke.
Hi, Femke.
Hello. I think like on the group, I made it half an hour later, so I think maybe Tanya might be joining us a little bit late. Oh, no, there she is. Look at that. Good.
Oh, for a minute, I thought I was late when you started saying that.
No. I was like, okay, like for Australia, it's going to be a lot earlier, so maybe we can like make it half an hour later. That's why I said 12:30.
Oh, I didn't say that actually.
But I thought I would check it. I would check in anyway. So that's good. I think maybe Cecilia, hopefully she will join us at some point. But we'll just go ahead and get started. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning. How
still
is it
waking up?
I am, very much so.
What time is it?
It's only 6 o'clock, but yes, right. Yeah, I mean, I'm normally up at this time anyway, but last night I just couldn't sleep. I was buzzing with energy. I was. Anyway, what's going on at the moment? It's all very exciting. How's the puppy going?
Yeah, she's good. I'll see if she gets the puppy crazies tonight. She's settled upstairs. If I hear lots of pounding on her, she's gone a bit sick, psycho.
Yeah, that's what we call it. Oh, spazzo. The girls are like, oh, Holly's gone spazzo. In fact, one time, I'll never forget this as long as I live, it was so funny. She and Kel had this real power play going on when she was little. And Kel wouldn't let her in the house sometimes, so he'd send her outside. And on this particular occasion, she'd been running around doing the crazies. And my computer's just popped up to say my internet's unstable.
Okay. Well, we can hear you properly.
Okay. Yeah, right. You're clear. Yeah.
You sound very stable.
Do I sound stable? Oh, good. Is that a state that I'm in, do you think?
It's just the computer.
And so the dog's going crazy, running around like mad, and Kel puts the dog outside. But what he didn't realise is that when he put the dog out the back, the side gate was still open and the front door was wide open. So Holly went running through the garden, got completely covered in mud, and then ran through the front door and ran like you couldn't have staged it any better, and leapt onto the brand new cream leather lounge and looked to her side as if to say, hey, look what I'm doing. Oh, it was hilarious. We were all laughing, but it was almost as if she was completely staging it for Kel. It was very funny.
Too funny.
When our dogs get that, because they usually get it either right before Finnegan goes to bed or when he goes to bed, and it's really loud.
Yeah.
But I also have to be careful that they don't mow him over.
Yes.
So they don't get to do it a lot. I get mad and protective. Okay, so have you guys prepared the confrontation and challenging work?
Yeah, I've read the PDF.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay. When you said prepare, I thought, oh no, was I supposed to prepare for something?
Yeah.
We are ready to confront you, Fenke.
Yes, bring it on.
Listen, there was a link to a audio of confrontation. Every time I click on that, I was bumped out of the website.
Yeah, but, the same thing, Francisco. Yeah.
Okay.
The link was broken.
So maybe you can send us the link directly or something.
Yeah. So I need to take a look at that.
Yeah. Actually, Femke, do you have the search function? Because I find I tried to type in, because I didn't have my computer with the links that I was on, the like a different computer. So I was I had printed out all the links for each week, and I thought, so I was typing it, and I didn't obviously put the link in properly. So it came up page error, and then it came up with the search option. But I don't know if you have a search option just on your website.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know if that's easy to do or not, because that's then when that search option, because I think if you even put, you know, completely something wrong in, it comes up page error, and then it actually brings up a search option. So that's how I found the Know Nothing
video. I just need to take a look at that and see if I can easily incorporate that, because that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, because so obviously it sends you there anyway. So I don't know if you do your website or someone else does, it might be able to be quite easily put on.
Yeah, I'll take a look at that. I do it myself, so I'll take a look. That'll be interesting to see how easy that is.
Cool, thank you.
You're welcome. So what I would like to do today is, because for most of us, confronting is not so easy. So what I would like to do is to just kind of get you prepared for when you actually encounter a situation where you can confront. And one of the things actually, I had this insight this morning.
Mm-hmm.
When I was explaining the new benchmarking forms that I'm going to be using next month in the Quantum Leap training,
mm-hmm.
and I have created there's a separate skill that I am proposing or introducing, and it's called Building Client Awareness, and part of that is the skill of confronting and challenging. And then below that, because I've put it on a guided scale of going from green to orange and yellow to red in terms of the where the skills are located, and if they take away from your coaching skills, or if they're in the yellow, if you will. And I was explaining the skill of tracking, which is right below, which I put right below confronting and challenging. And that actually tracking is really a critical preparation for being able to confront. And so, and the reason for that is because if you can track track a conversation, and you can notice, hey, you know, this is what you said before, but now you're saying this, and you're completely contradicting yourself. If you're able to do that, that tracking, then you have you're putting yourself in a position where you can confront your client on at least on that one area where you can confront your client on, which is where they are not congruent, either in thoughts or and behavior, or conflicting ideas. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So practicing your tracking skills is one way to kind of set yourself up for confrontation. But what I find is that a lot of coaches don't really feel that all that comfortable with confronting. And they haven't really developed their style of confronting. So I want to dive deeper into that today. Mm-hmm. So, Francisco, how comfortable are you with making confrontations?
I feel very good, especially because in my business, I have done it in the non-meta coaching way.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, sometimes it didn't come out the right way, and people get very defensive. So I was reading the information that you provided, and I don't have any uncomfortable issues about confronting. My issue is about the right timing. So it actually makes the click versus getting the person very defensive and justifying why, you know, they are doing this or they are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the portion that I'm not 100% comfortable. When is that? And maybe related to the tracking skills that you think that we need to be very good at.
Okay. Yeah. So we can go over that a little bit on what situations do you confront and mm-hmm. when. So we can do that. And then Maria, how do you feel about confronting?
Look, I think the biggest challenge I probably, like the thing that comes to mind when you say that is like with my last coaching client is over-identifying with the topic and then not being in a position to be able to confront.
And when you do over-identify with the topic, what then stops you from being able to confront?
Because I'm not in that meta position. I'm kind of in there, kind of empathizing with the client.
Okay.
So not seeing the opportunity to confront. That's the kind of my most recent experience. With other clients, generally in the past, I feel comfortable to, you know, to be able to confront, and I have on occasion confronted clients. So I'm not. Yeah, I think the challenge, the recent challenge for me, is probably over identifying with the topic that the client has brought to the session.
Okay, so that's something that we can explore a little bit further as well. When you do over identify, and what do you need to change then? Mm-hmm. To like stop over identifying, I'm guessing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. One of the things that I actually like, it reminded me of a story of one of my clients that, like, in retrospect, I feel like it's a big word, but I feel like I failed her in a way. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't confront. Mm-hmm. And it was because her daughter, and this is like, I think 2 or 3 years ago, and her daughter had suicidal thoughts and was diagnosed as being clinically depressed. Mm-hmm. And she had the belief or the, yeah, if she, that she was fully responsible for her daughter, because her daughter could not be responsible for her thoughts because she was clinically depressed. Mm-hmm. And so she, the problem was that because she was so overbearing, because she felt so responsible and she didn't have the power, because her daughter did like her own thing anyway. I think she was like 18 or 19 at the time. This put her in a really uncomfortable situation, and it basically made the situation worse. And, but at the same time, there was like this, you know, really real fear of her daughter committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself in a place where I was like, well, I don't know what I would do. And, you know, like, I know that she's not response able because her daughter is 18. She doesn't have the power to change her daughter's thoughts or behaviors and things like that. But I could really understand the where she was coming from. And so, like, that really stopped me from really holding her feet to the fire, because the way that she was thinking and feeling was actually counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's, yeah, when we do over-identify, or when we kind of go like, oh yeah, I understand how you're thinking, then it can actually have the effect where we don't confront, and then we're
not really acting in the best interest of our client.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it can be quite tough, like when you have certain situations.
Yeah. And I think probably each coach, you know, would have different, you know, contexts or triggers, you know, for different, you know, different experiences that would possibly bring that, you know, kind of to the forefront.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good to think about those things ahead of time, because I didn't really, like, I never really thought about that. And then you know, I was confronted with it, and it was even like from one session to the next, I was like really struggling with that of like, okay, like I know that she's really challenged, and I because she really did not want to let go of her belief, and I should have just said that if you do not want to be confronted on your belief and you do not want to change the belief, then we should stop coaching. Mm-hmm. That's what I should have said.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wanted to help, and
So maybe we can go over some of your beliefs as well, in terms of maybe your you know, how do you get yourself into that know nothing state, and your beliefs about confronting, and maybe we can create our own beliefs around that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that sounds good. And so, Tanya,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to confronting, what in coaching, what are your feelings and thoughts about that, and across different situations?
Well, I'm feeling more and more comfortable with confronting. And I just see how powerful it is. And so I'm developing some really good frames around the importance of it, because exactly as you say, otherwise I've had similar situations to the one that you're describing, not with that set of circumstances, but just where a client's dancing around and their beliefs are holding everything in place. And because I haven't confronted them on the belief, you know, the fundamental thing hasn't necessarily shifted. They're just feeling a bit better because they've had a chance to talk to someone about it.
Right.
So for me, that's becoming more important. If I'm clear, if I have a clear sense of what's going on, then I'm very comfortable to confront. And I was listening to you, Maria, and I was listening to your story, trying to get clear on, well, what is it exactly when I'm not clear. But as I'm saying this now, it's occurring to me that it's really just about checking in and asking the question tentatively,
mm-hmm.
Rather than, you know, confronting with conviction that I know what the answer is. In my mind, I'm feeling more confident about it and more willing to do it. I think it's just going to be practice and feeling more confident with actually having that unknowing, and being open with the know nothing mind to find out what is going on for the client.
Right. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think you made a good point, and that's also like Maria, one of the frames that I have is that it's a belief, it's not the person. So really having that very separate of like, okay, it's just a belief, and it's not who they are, but it's also, the question is not so much about whether it's true or not. It's about whether it's useful or not to have that belief.
Yes.
And that's a very good distinction. And so, like, that's what I mostly keep in the back of my mind. Like, is this belief useful? And one of the things, and I think that answers Francisco's question, when do you confront? One of the main things that I confront on is once you've got the strategy process for the present state, And you know, like, what is it that they are trying to achieve with their thinking, because it has a positive intention. So, for example, like, what someone is trying to create is a sense of safety, but in order to create a sense of safety, they create a sense of danger first.
Mm.
And so, like, in a way, like, a lot of the time, what we try to achieve with our present state is the exact opposite of what we're actually getting. And so that, I think, is a good confrontation to make, is like, ah, so how is this working for you? When you get this trigger, this is where your mind goes, and you do that because you want to create a sense of safety. Are you actually feeling safe? So I think that for me is like one of the main confrontations that I make is to point out that paradox.
Mm.
That's a good point, Femke. Maybe we can go over some of the languaging as well in some different ways that we can make those confrontations.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
Especially for some of the more common ones that you...
Yeah, because I think
what you just said.
That one, it would be the main confrontation that you make is they're actually, what they're trying to create, they're creating the exact opposite.
Mm.
Or because a lot of the time present state is about avoiding something. Like just to give you an example, yesterday I was coaching one of my clients, and she's... her goal is to just do the things that she has the desire to do, because right now in the morning she wakes up and she's kind of depressed, and a lot of that has to do with the lack of love and passion that she has in her relationship. And yesterday we talked about that, and
sounds like a bar.
I'm pouring some water.
Sorry, that's me. I'm pouring tea into my container and I've got my earphones on. That's interesting. So that's coming. Oh, of course it is. Yep, don't remind me. Sorry, everyone.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm a bit confronted by this session. I'm getting into the wine early.
Wine. Hi.
So this lady, we were talking yesterday about like how she creates this sense of depression for herself, and it starts off like within her relationship. She's for a long time, she started off as a kid with the belief that men take initiative and men are the ones who take the lead, and so that's what she took into her relationship with her, and so she had a lot of expectations. And then with the partner that she chose, he didn't meet those expectations. So she's her initial, like years ago, state was to fight for, like, to kind of like get him to take initiative. And then if he wouldn't do it, then she would do it herself. And so she took a lot of initiative. And that kind of like after years of doing that quote unquote fight, she decided, oh, I'm going to let go of this. I'm going to let go of my expectations. And instead, I'm going to just let it slide and see if he takes initiative, which then turns into like once that takes long enough and he doesn't take initiative, she gets like she asks him about it, but then it turns into like an explosive argument. And so that's like the kind of like the storyline of how, like what we discovered. And one of the things that I noticed was that when she said like, oh yeah, I just let go of like the expectation, the way in which she said it didn't actually sound like she let go. It just was like a steeling herself against the disappointment. But there was like resentment in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what, like, I pointed that out. So that is also another way of confronting. It's like, you're saying this, but what I'm hearing in your voice and in your posture is this. So there's like a disconnect between, yeah, you're saying that you let go of expectations, but there's a defensiveness there. So that's a confrontation.
Like confronting an incongruency, no?
Confronting an incongruence, yes. And okay. That can be in what they say, like they can contradict themselves like over time, which is where the tracking
okay.
is powerful. But it can also be like what they say, what they actually say to you and what you see or hear in their voice is completely disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another aspect of confronting.
I have a client recently that as we were finishing the session, I was looking for the next day to meet, and then he said something like, kind of smiling, say, now I have to force myself to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I stop and say, do you hear what you just said?
Yeah.
And then he realized that, wow, I mean, he's been working in this outcome, and then, you know, this incongruency that he has to force himself to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big, a big click that he made at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that's where confrontations don't have to be like really in your face, quote unquote, aggressive statements or stance. It can be something really small where you are just really pointing out the incongruence or the lack of integrity.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
what they're saying.
No, makes sense. That's a good clarification for me because my work world has been confronting, you know. Directly and strong, and then of course that creates sometimes a lot of friction.
Yeah,
for me it highlights just how incredibly important it is the way we frame it up beforehand. And mm-hmm. I notice that I will often frame again before I confront.
Yeah,
especially if I'm feeling uncomfortable. I say, look, I'm just, just curious here, just about to say, ask you something. And it might seem a bit confronting, but it's in service of us. You know, I feel like we're getting really close here or whatever it is. And then there, it's kind of like giving them a crash pad.
Right.
And then they will come in with me with that same curiosity rather than, being reactive and perhaps taking it the wrong way. That's my intention anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Like one of the things that I noticed with regards to that, Tanya, is I've really looked for my own style of confronting, and mm-hmm. I usually do it with humor. So like, and a lot of the time it's like, okay, so what you're saying is that you want to avoid the disappointment. But in your way of thinking and feeling, you've actually been creating your own disappointment for years.
Mm.
And so, a lot of the time, once I start feeding that back, like I did that yesterday with my client as well, like, oh, so you've been, you don't want to get disappointed, but you decided to just continue staying in the same situation for several years so that you could get really, really disappointed.
Mm.
And so like just making it, sometimes making it really big and at the same time light.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
What I notice is that a lot of the time my clients are like, oh my God, yes, that's what I've been doing.
Mm. Mm. And that's different to, there's a lightness to that for sure.
And one of the things that, I just had like a, One, like, another belief that I have about that is that that it's just a creation of the mind.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, but it's their creation. So, because a lot of the time what people have done is that they've kind of placed it outside of their responsibility of, or outside of their power. And I think in the wording, I make sure that I put the power back with them, and that that can be very confrontational, but it's also at the same time empowering. So I make sure, like what I did yesterday, I just asked a question. So it sounds like you've been creating these disappointments for yourself for a very long time. And then just asking a simple question like, oh, does that make your life a party, or do you want to keep doing that? It's like, it puts the power back in their hands. So then it's like, it's painful because, I mean, there were tears and there was like a, yeah, I feel so angry at myself for that. But at the same time, it's like, if I then ask, do you want to continue doing it this way? Then there's also that sense of relief of, no, I can, there is another way. So I think I make the implications that, one, they can create something else. And two, that they have that power of meaning making and doing something else.
That's so important.
Maria, what are your thoughts about that? Does that give you some ideas of how to?
Yeah, I've just been busily summarizing some of these things. So, so I've written down. So the first confrontation, one question is, how is that working for you? And that's if there's like an incongruence between their desired behavior versus their current behavior. So the desired outcome. Usually because what the client's trying to avoid, they're actually doing that. The second thing was confronting an incongruence, whether it's in the session or over time. And as you said, that that comes down to how well we're tracking in the session and over time. So, confronting them when we hear the incongruence or see the incongruence in the session over time. So you're saying this, but what I'm hearing in your voice is this, that where there's a disconnect. The third thing was, I think Francisca just said, did you hear what you just said? So bring their attention to, a disconnect between what they want and maybe what they've just said.
Yes, that one is also incongruence.
Yeah. The fourth thing I've written is incongruence with the, similarly, the behaviours versus the wants. So as you were just saying, Femke, so you don't want to get disappointed, but you're thinking a behaviour is getting you even more disappointed. Sounds like you've been disappointed for a long time. And I really like the last thing you just said, Femke, about the power. And so even when you, after you've, I think that's a really key thing, is after you've confronted them about, you know, what they've, you know, their thinking and their behaviors has continued getting them what they actually don't want, is kind of bringing light, you know, to the fact that they have the power to change it. So do you want to keep doing that? I think is very powerful, because it doesn't just leave them potentially feeling angry or frustrated with themselves. It gives them something to do with that. So I think it's really important to remember.
Yeah, exactly. So for like
the only situation I can see, well, I'll share a story with you. I have a client at the moment that we were talking about her the other night, Femke, where she's seriously running an under responsibility. And so it's very difficult to get her to step into that. And she's fine with the confronting, but it almost sort of, my sense is that it's almost giving her more evidence for why she's feeling depressed and hopeless. And she gets all fired up. In the past, I'm being very hopeful that we've had a breakthrough after our session the other day. Yeah, so that bringing her back into her power is, I guess there needs to be a willingness, and they have to have made the decision and the commitment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is the next layer.
So, but and this is like also where you need to kind of listen for the layers, and that might be what you're actually saying. But if you're confronting her and she uses like that whatever she's being confronted on as evidence,
mm.
or like, oh, that's why I'm depressed, then that's then that she's not outside of her present state yet. And she's just doing more of the same. And that's where you can then confront her with that. So are you doing it again? I think that's like another way of confronting is repeatedly like, are you doing it again? Or like, and so that someone becomes really aware of, oh, there I go.
Yeah, which is incredibly powerful, especially if it's such a conditioned way of showing up, especially with that whole victimhood.
Exactly. Yeah, especially with that.
One thing, Tanya, that I've shared like a few resources with clients in the past, and one of an article that Michael Hall wrote about responsibility 2 and 4. So sometimes after a session or, you know, before the next session, you know, like I'll let the client know, you know, if I've brought it up in the session, is that, you know, how responsible do you feel you are for this or this? And I'll say, you know, would you like me to share an article about this? And so I get them to do some reading, and then in the following session, we can have a talk about that. So it kind of, it gives them some awareness around, you know, their power zone and what's within their powers, their thinking, feeling, you know, doing.
Yeah, definitely. I'm finding more and more that there's an education component of the coaching that I'm doing with people. It's such a huge part. Otherwise, you can spend a lot of time explaining things to people, which means that, you know, that it's very interesting for them, and they're learning new things at a mental level, but they're not actually integrating the changes into their own being and their own experiences.
Yeah, I can share that with you.
I would love that, actually, because it's interesting. I've got her big under responsibility, and then I've got a couple of other clients who are running very, very big over responsibility. I should just put them all in a room together and let them work it out, I reckon.
Oh, no, they just reinforce them. Like, they just get into a state of codependence.
Exactly. But then I could say, can you see what's happening here?
Yeah.
Frank, could you please expand a little bit on the responsibility 2 and 4?
How specifically?
Well, I mean, I read it. I haven't read what Michael did on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I look at the questions, are you taking your clients personally? Well, sometimes I feel like I do now that I, you know, read this question.
Yeah.
So what do I need to do to keep it clean? Sometimes after this session, I still spend some time, you know, kind of annoyed or something that we couldn't achieve, whatever or so.
Okay. So there's like, when you have the power zone, so like I am the owner of my thoughts and my feelings and my actions. So is your client. And I have like a very deep belief that my client has access to their thinking and their feeling and their actions. And I'm not responsible to that or for that. I'm too responsible to them, but not for. And so that's a big distinction, because with my thoughts and feelings and behaviors, I can be responsible to them, but the way that they're going to respond or the decisions that they make, I have absolutely no control over that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so it really is like once you go through that, the power zone pattern, what Michael has done is he added a few steps to that to really make the distinction so that you start seeing other people with their bubbles, their power zones, and noticing that that's not what you are response able for. Like you literally do not have that ability. And so making that distinction, what does that then mean for like them reaching their desired outcome? You don't have the ability to reach the outcome for them. They do.
They do. That's right.
And so that distinction to really truly embody that, like even if you like, then you can still empathize and feel, you know, like have, I guess, compassion for them. But you also can see, if you see someone with all their powers, you also know that even if they're struggling and even if they're in pain right now, and even if they don't have access to their powers, you know that they have them. And that's a, you know, like the example that I gave with this mother whose daughter was clinically depressed. And that's like a, you know, I think a big problem also with like labeling and giving, you know, putting someone in a box, like, oh, so she's clinically depressed, so she doesn't have, she is not response able. Mm-hmm. Like how do you think, if you approach someone like that, how do you think that empowers or disempowers them?
Well, I mean, if you are knowing your own bubble, I'm thinking about the others, that they have the resources. You are not able, I mean, if you maintain the separation, you will be able to allow them by, you know, whatever process, confrontation or whatever, facilitate the process for them to make the change. Mm-hmm. As I talk about this, I'm realizing where I get stuck in terms of, you know, dragging myself into the situation, and I'm feeling responsible that the person hasn't achieved the outcome yet.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, that's clear. That's great. Thank you.
And frustration comes from not from powerlessness. Mm-hmm. Like there's an expectation, and we don't have the power to change it. Well, if we take over someone else's responsibilities, that is like the surefire way to get frustrated.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, that's perfectly clear, especially related to the discussion we had last Monday too.
Yeah, exactly. That's sense. What I was just thinking.
Immediately went to that. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, so yesterday the lady that I was coaching, she's close to me, so I know her really well. Mm-hmm. And like to me that is not a problem. I feel for her, and I feel love for her, but I also know that even though, you know, there's a lot of tears, and even though she's given her powers away, I can be there for her, I can feel for her, and at the same time, that's one of my beliefs, the best thing that I can do for her is to hold that knowledge that she does have the power to change. She is not really a victim, even if she feels like she is a victim and she feels like she made like a wrong turn in life and it all really hurts. Yes, it really does hurt, but she's not a victim.
That's really powerful.
Yeah, because that also allows me to confront her and to go to places, to go to certain places where, yeah, she might, where it may be painful.
Yeah, that's really powerful, because with all this NLP training through the years, it was mostly stay away from, you know, move the client away from the feeling of, you know, whatever the bad emotional feeling it would be, using quick techniques to move away from that.
Right. Yeah. And that, like, that's what I think, the power of meta coaching is, that, we lead the person there. We don't leave them there, but
yeah.
We empower them there. And that's where confrontation is so powerful. And honestly, like, I kind of like, I at some point, like, when you kind of do this and you've done it several times and you kind of see like how we can put ourselves in a quagmire just because we try to create something, but our thoughts and feelings actually create the opposite. And it's so, and in a way it's like, would be so easy to do something else. It's kind of humorous if you think about it, like, and that's what I noticed that my clients, they can have that sense of humor about. It's like, oh my God, I'm so stupid. Once they get past maybe some initial like anger at themselves, and when they say like, so yesterday the lady was like, oh my God, I'm so angry, and I have been so angry at myself. And then I said, and how is that working out for you? And she was like, well, it isn't. So, yeah, approaching it with a little bit of humor, I think, you know, rather than taking, they take themselves so seriously anyway. Like, if you start taking them that serious, it's just going to make it worse rather than alleviate it.
One more quick thing, Fenka. What do you do to maintain yourself in the know-nothing state?
Well, I think that one belief of like having like not being responsible, that is, that is a big difference. In a way, I kind of see it as a mathematical equation. So I get into that mode of like, I'm solving a problem. And so I don't have an opinion about the equation, because it's not up to me. It's not mine. So I really look at the structure. I think having that focus on structure rather than content. And then, like I said, it's not, to me, it's not whether a belief is true or not. It's whether it's useful for my client. And so I don't decide that. I'm a vessel. So that's how I see myself, is like, I'm a vessel. I'm not, like, my opinions are really not important. And I think that those beliefs are really critical to be able to maintain a know-nothing state.
Because I often find myself bringing my experience to the situation, then I'm thinking, wow, this is so simple. If he only does A, B, and C, I mean, that will be done. What is the big deal about it? Of course, I don't say that, but it's all this maybe knowledge about the subject, or, you know, my experience or whatever, that kind of start clouding my my facilitation process because I think I have the solution, and maybe only if I teach them how to do it, we'll be able to do it. Yes.
Right. And
Kay, are you auditory digital? What's your just your approach? It sounds so logical, and I'm just curious.
I have that. I do.
That's your accounting background, Femke.
It is. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I loved math.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I needed to learn in coaching is to kind of also pay attention to the body, not just the mind. And so I've integrated that, and I've also so I can do both, but I think that part is just very well developed, and I think it really helps me in my coaching.
It's useful for me because it's a different frame, and the reason I interrupted to do that is because I wanted to share for me what I find useful so that I don't get caught, as you said, but it's so simple, you know, they just have to do this, is that know-nothing mind, I always think of it like a child's mind. You know, they're just so open and curious, and yet their heart is really full, and so there's no judgment.
Yeah.
They're just really like, oh, how does that work, and how do you do that? And that's what I find really helpful, because it just really allows me to access something that's not in that judgmental space, and then I'm completely focused on them rather than in my own head. So I don't know if that's helpful, Francisco, but I felt
no, that's perfect.
Compelled to share it.
Yeah, and I think also to add to that is there's two things. One, my experience has been that if I just ask the questions, I'm going to be surprised by the answers because for example, I worked with someone who had a fear of cold calling, and I asked three meta questions, and he got to like a reference experience of when his parents divorced and no one could play with him because he was 3 years old and he just kept getting no. I could not have predicted that. And that to me was very humbling experience. I can think I know, but I don't. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm always really open, like, oh, I'm curious where someone is going to go. That's one. At the same time, it's not like I don't allow my experience to come in, but I bring it tentatively. First, I want to know, like, what is it that they're trying to achieve? And I want to have enough information so that I understand the structure. Even if in the background I think, oh, maybe this will help, I just park that. And maybe it's relevant, maybe it's not, but I don't need to be right or anything, or I don't have to have the answers. If it helps, it helps. Mm-hmm. And then I make it tentative or as a menu list. So it's also not a taboo to bring your expertise in. But if, let's say that your expertise is more performance-based, it's not like your client doesn't know how to do it, but actually what's stopping them is like a reference experience to when their parents got divorced. So you want to find out where the change power is. And that's that's why I just hold off on drawing any kind of conclusions and just stay in that place of like, how does it work for my client? Does that help, Francisco?
Oh yeah, big time. I love to think about it. This is great. I mean, I sometimes stick to the issue of the frustration for a while, and I diffuse it with, you know, exercise and other things, but it bothers me because sometimes I can't really be fully in the nothing state, because I'm dealing with this particular issue that I wasn't able to help resolve this particular situation.
Okay. So that has to do with both, like, jumping to conclusions maybe, and over responsibility?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, Femke, I noticed, I think you did a releasing judgment webinar, was it very recently?
Yeah.
Do you have a link to that? Can we?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just look it up.
Is that those resources, look, all the way, I was actually thinking of this the other day, but all the webinars that you do, are they accessible easily? Like, because you've done some really, really good webinars that we watch. I'm not sure where you save them. Are they, like, on the Coach Mentor website?
Yeah, they are on the website. I should be really be doing, like, a one page with all the links to my webinars.
And Femke, another feedback in one of the inductions that you have for the, I think was for the mission and goals.
Yeah.
It ends abruptly. So, you know, you get in a comfortable place, and so you're going almost to the end, and then the scene stops.
Okay.
So I think there's, I don't know.
Something if wrong with it?
So the last part is kind of missing, or it's not going through or so.
Oh, okay. Can you send me the link to that?
Yeah, I'll look for
which
that.
Which one it is. So, like, yeah, it's trying to get to the page. So I'll see if I can, there we go. Releasing judgment. Like, one more thing I also wanted to, so if we kind of like make a summary of what we're discussing today in terms of confronting, I think I would say there's three main situations in which you make a confrontation. One is when there's an incongruence, and that's where you want to be tracking the conversation, but it could also be an incongruence between your client says something and it's obviously in their body language that they actually don't mean what they say. Like, my client said, I let go of all of my expectations. I've done that a long time ago. No, you didn't.
Surprise!
And so then we actually got to, like, that's a moment where we really got to the core, because she then said, yeah, I'm steeling myself against sadness. So that's one. And when there's an incongruence, either in what they say over time or between what they say and how their body shows up. The second one is when the way that they have created their present state, and that it actually is that they're actually creating the opposite of what they're wanting to create with it. So that's the second one. And then the third one is sometimes you need to hold your client accountable. So if they haven't done something, like they've, you know, like this is the third time that they haven't followed through on something that they said they were going to follow through or done the tasking. And then you need to confront them on that as well. So it just makes it simpler to think in, like, okay, what are some situations where I could make a confrontation? And then, like, think, like, so we've had some, in addition to that, we've had some beliefs. So some of my beliefs are that beliefs are separate from the person, and it's not whether that belief is true, but whether it's useful in that context. So I always check that. I have a very strong belief that my client has all the powers in order to create something else, and that they have created their problem right now. So, like, putting that power back into their hands is really critical for me. Um, But like those, like to me, those are some of the main ones that allow me to stay present without having to take over or without wishing it away for them or like and like on top of that, for me, like an emotion is just an emotion. It has information in it and it's not going to kill them. You know, like it's not going to do anything bad to them. It might be very painful and I can see that and I can hold the space for them, but I'm not scared of anyone's emotions.
Yeah, that's very good. That's very important. Mm-hmm.
So, Maria, with regards to the over-identifying, do you have some answers to that now, or do you like? What would you like to discuss about that?
I don't know. I think I probably like I've got. Generally, I'm pretty self-aware of creating. Trying to create a clean, you know, like a my state before a coaching session. So, you know, like in some of those beliefs are, you know, before I enter the coaching session, like, you know, what's meant to happen in the session is meant to happen. It's not about me. So I think I probably need a trigger. Like, so, you know, maybe I have to kind of be conscious to, to have a trigger. Like, say, if something comes up that I feel I'm identifying with, how will I know? How will I respond to it? How would I, be aware in the meantime until I'm able to not do it at all?
Right. And you know what? Like, that's one of the things, like, I, you know, there are still moments where I find myself, like, especially like when someone has a belief and I'm like, that makes so much sense to me. It's not useful for them, but it makes sense. And to check in with myself, like, and to not, like, I don't have to be perfect. It's okay to sometimes have that. And like to, you know, to then have the awareness. And I really think it's just being like having that, sometimes having those meta moments in a coaching conversation of like, oh, where, what is my state right now? And where am I at? Rather than like, oh, like I'm not allowed to have that at all.
Yeah, I one thing that comes up for me is if I'm having trouble with a particular concept myself, and then the client is, and I haven't resolved that trouble, it's hard for me to go meditate that, and I feel incongruent with bringing a mirror up to somebody else's, you know, like troubling concept when I haven't dealt with it myself.
Oh, really?
I don't feel congruent with that.
You know what? The way that I look at that is that this is a great way for me to learn.
That's like a great frame.
steal some insights, and I get paid for it too.
Yeah, that's a great frame. I like that. I like that. And the one thing, and I'll say what I'm, because the one thing that like I've been talking a little bit about is that, you know, being an expat and then having a coaching conversation with an expat who's, you know, having this, you know, similar challenges. And so I kind of over-identify with that. So it's really challenging to go meta to that. And but I like that reframe. It's an opportunity to explore it.
Yeah, because you're kind of like, okay, how does this work for this person? And I really stick with the quantum leap system, like the present state, desired state.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where my accounting background really comes in handy, because I kind of it's a bit more removed, and it's just information.
Yeah.
and I can step into it. And then sometimes I think, oh my God, like that, I know exactly what this is like, but it's almost like a, I'm just like get very eager to figure out what the solution is.
So I'm going to have to try that on.
Yeah. Cause like, and you know what, I've had like, what was it? Like one of my friends back in Holland, I've helped her set up her business. And she said, you know what? I get so frustrated sometimes because I help my clients with things that I'm struggling with, and I and like I get so jealous that they have solved it, and I have that, like I, you know, I'm like, oh, I wish I could do that. So yeah,
I would try that on.
I think we have that expectation of ourselves that we have to be perfect.
Yeah,
and it's, and like that makes it worse. I think that stops our own development and progress.
Yeah.
There's also a belief too, and I get this a lot from my husband. He can't understand how I can be coaching someone on something that I haven't got handled. And as I explained to him, I'm not a teacher who's standing up in front of the class teaching quantum physics. You know, I don't need to have it handled. It's more it's more being there completely for them with that curious, non-judgmental, open mind, guiding them to figure it out for themselves. And by being there as a facilitator, if I don't have that handled myself, or if it's something that I'm working on, exactly as you said, Femke, it's like, wow, I can actually, you know, have the benefit of seeing it from a different perspective, gaining some insight into how I might be able to manage it differently. And I think that's one of the absolute gifts of coaching, is that we do get to have that. And I also think it's interesting how we tend to attract people often who are, you know, having similar challenges. It's almost like there's a frequency resonance that draws us towards each other. And I think it's very, very beautiful. It's almost quite sacred that, you know, we attract each other, and in that space, you know, some magic happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's like, you know, like it's just an opportunity to allow yourself to grow through the work that you do.
So there's a great quote that they use a lot from integrated nutrition, which is, you're not a sage on the stage, you're a guide on the side.
Nice.
Femke, so from what you just said, hypothetically, I could be a nutritionist and a very overweight nutritionist, teaching people or coaching people to eat well and to be fit and be very successful at that, even though I am very overweight.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like it, you know, it's not incredibly congruent, and
of course,
you know, people may think like, oh, like, I don't know if I should trust you. It's that, like, when it comes to marketing, that might be problematic, mm-hmm. But, I had that conversation with my husband the other day because, with everything that has happened in the MetaCoach community, he was like, you know what? I don't get it, because you guys are, you know, he says that you guys like you're all into like positivity and like and kumbaya and
we forgot to sing our kumbaya this morning when we started the session.
You know, he has the idea that it's all like with hula hoops and stuff that. So, but and then like I he said that, and I said, yeah, absolutely, you know, we're like, none of us are perfect. And I said, so you, as a creative director and a copywriter, how's your website coming along?
And it was, oh, what did he like say to that?
Yeah. And he was like, oh yeah, no, I get it. You know, you know, the best accountants, they don't really have their own accounting in order a lot of the time. And Yeah, that, I don't know why. And ideally, of course, like I strive to be the best coach and like I'm continuously learning, but I'm not gonna sit here and say, oh, I'm like, I'm perfect. I don't make any mistakes and I always follow the system. Mm-hmm. I'd be lying. And if I put that on myself, it takes away from my enjoyment in coaching, but also like my learning. So yeah, I think.
And can I add to that, MK, because specifically, Francesco, what you were saying about the overweight nutrition coach, because that's where I started my coaching journey in the nutrition and health coaching arena. It amazes me that some of my colleagues who I studied with who are really thriving in their businesses, that's exactly the way that they approach it. And I have one particular colleague who's in Western Australia. She's just had surgery for because of an ongoing illness that she's had. And all of her communications are so real. You know, she talked about after her surgery, just how awful she felt and how she had a packet of chips for dinner one night. And yet she just owns it. And then she talks about what she's going to do about it. And perhaps you're in a similar situation. So there's not a, what's the word? I don't know how to describe it. She's not kind of going, I've got all the answers, look at me. People really connect with her. And as a result, you know, she's doing really well. Yeah. So I think it just highlights the need for us to be real and be okay with being real and being okay not having the answers. It almost seems that people are quite appreciative in that authentic realness, no matter how raw it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got one of my clients, I've been asking a little bit about like you know, the decision-making process for choosing to work with me or choosing to work with someone else. And this lady said like, oh, there was this one person who was really good, like who looked like she was really good at what she did and it felt intimidating. And I think that's sometimes like if you feel like, oh my God, this person is amazing. You know, they have everything in order. It's hard to connect.
Yeah, it is. It is. I you know, often see people on Facebook and there's sort of a formula that they seem to have followed and they've got everything so schmick. And I'm just like, I just want to scratch the surface on my laptop and go, hello, are you in there? Who are you really?
Yes.
And yeah, it's yeah, feel that connection.
Yeah.
A quick example. I had somebody this weekend. He's a top nutritionist that works with, you know, our animals, and he's in a very, very good shape. I mean, this guy is perfectly fit. He followed all this nutrition, and he was drinking a Coca-Cola. And I couldn't hold it. I said, you know, can you tell me you've been, you know, the top nutritionist and all this stuff? How come are you drinking a Coca-Cola?
Yeah.
So he gave me all the explanation. I mean, I don't drink any coffee, whatever. I really like it. I mean, I just have one a day, only one a day, but it's something that I enjoy very much.
Wow.
Anyway.
It also highlights too, though, because my husband goes crazy with this. He just can't understand, you know, all these different diets and why it's all about paleo one week and it's all about veganism the next week. I keep trying to explain to him that his idea of what it is to be healthy is often how fit are you, how far can you run, what's your stamina like, and what's your weight. Whereas health can mean so many things to so many different people. You know, maybe it's more about muscle tone and ability to do stuff, you know, whether it's functional fitness, calisthenics. You know, well, I know I'm doing well. The reason I train three times a week is because I want to be able to do handstands and pull-ups down at the beach and show off my muscles and feel good. But for other people, it's actually more about being able to overcome a disease that they have, which means they need to manage their energy, or, you know, perhaps they're keeping symptoms at bay by making changes. And that's been one of the biggest insights that I've had is that health isn't to everybody else what it necessarily is to the majority. You know, those yeah. pin-up health coaches who look trim, you know, it's not always about that. Sometimes it's more about having the strength just to get up in the morning, eat something, as opposed to going out and getting a coffee, which is easier, or, you know, whatever it is. So, yeah, it just reminds me that know-nothing mind. What is health for them? What is it that they aspire for that they can't reach? Why is that important? All those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just thinking yesterday, Francisco, how nice it would be to drink a Coca-Cola. Because I saw an ad, and I don't, like, I used to drink a lot of Coca-Cola and, like, a diet soda, and I don't anymore at all. And so I haven't had, like, a Coke in, I don't know, 10 years or something. And then I thought, yesterday I saw the ad, and I thought, oh, that looks kind of good.
I don't drink it either, but I love it. I mean, I used to drink a lot too, and I will enjoy very much if I have one, you know.
Yeah.
And now they do like one semi-healthy, I think, with like the green one with cane sugar.
Ah.
Something like that. I don't know. All right, so back to confronting. We have a couple of minutes left. Anything, like, let me ask first, was this useful today?
Absolutely.
Very useful, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very useful.
Very good. And are there any questions, anything pressing that you would like to ask?
No, I think we covered that quite in depth. So it's really clear, and I think it's just, you know, because I guess it's just another reminder of, not to let things go in a session if we see some of these things like the incongruencies and, you know, the behaviours that are keeping them stuck with the same thing even though they want something different and they're holding clients accountable, just being more aware, I think, is good before going into a session.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, that is another, like, another one of my beliefs is that that's what they're paying me for.
Uh-huh. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm, that's a good one.
Mm. It really is. So, and, you know, like, I worked with one of my clients and I said, like, oh, sometimes you might hate me and that's okay, because you don't like what I have to say or it's uncomfortable. And then, like, a couple of weeks later she was like, I really hate you right now. Good, that means that you're learning.
Yeah.
One thing, Franca, is the importance of the silence. Depending on the situation, but at the end, yes, because sometimes it's the tendency to add more. For me, occasionally, it's the tendency to just keep a little bit more, and it's just holding myself. And I think the silence is going on for such a long time, and it's not.
Yes, and I think that is so critical. I'm glad that you bring that up. I remember that, and I might have shared it. I know I shared it recently in a group, so I might have shared it here. But the first time, like, I did a true confrontation, it was on, like, one of my clients. He didn't want to become rich because then he would become an asshole and he would look down on people. And what he was actually doing, he was already looking down on people because he was making them, like, if it wasn't like a big, powerful corporation, he saw them basically as small and unable to pay him and like, so I said, so that was just my one question. So are you, I fed back what he had said, and then I asked him, are you already looking down on people? And I held the silence, and it was, oh my God, it was so uncomfortable. And I could feel myself turning red, like, what have I done? And then he said, whoa, that was a punch in the gut. And I was like, oh my God. And he said, but that's exactly it. And it was like the biggest transformation for him to just realize, oh my God, I'm already doing it.
About 10 more minutes.
So yeah, that really gave me like a big insight of like how powerful it is to just stay with it, even if you feel uncomfortable. And my style of confronting is very gentle. I don't get into people's faces and I don't feel the need to break them down. I just point out the obvious, really. But that can still be quite painful. And if I leave a silence, it has that time to drive home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Any other questions or things to add?
No, that's all good. Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, everyone.
Very nice. And what I would suggest is to spend some time thinking about, like, your style. What is your style of confronting? And maybe there's, like, areas in your life where you have made confrontations in exactly the way that you want. And kind of like you can start off with some of the beliefs that we shared, but also like what other beliefs will be helpful in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Okay. So I believe that the next time is when we are going to start practicing with coaching.
Next one is the introductory section.
Oh, okay. So we're not ready for that yet. Okay.
28th is the introduction session, and then the following session is the 11th of April after that. And I'm actually going to be in Oz. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make the call. And then on the 25th of April, you're in Norway.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. And then we've got two in May and two in June to do the sessions as well.
Okay.
So in preparation for next time, anything else that we need to look at?
There's a PDF on the introduction. I had just a quick look. There's a PDF and video to watch that goes for about an hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I haven't watched it yet.
And then we'll just practice with that. And I have some other things to add to that because I've had, like, since I've been working on the Quantum Leap, I've just got some insights. So I'll share that as well. And then we'll just do a practice run.
Okay. Excellent.
Great.
All right. Well, if you have any questions, post them in the Facebook group in the meantime, or if you just want to, share. Something on the Facebook group. I shared the letting go of judgment link there.
Oh, thank you.
So you can go there and access that. And then we will meet 2 weeks from now.
Great. Sounds thank good. You everybody.
All right, thank you very much. Everyone.
Thank you.
Afternoon, bye. Evening.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. Bye.